Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
You there, lad. What are we listening to?
Heritage Radio Network, sir.
Very good. I'm Sir Kensington, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's November 8th, 2016. We're going to be talking about pumpkin beers and the Long Island Cheese Pumpkin Project. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, Union Beer Distributors, suppliers of world-class ales and lagers. And if you'd like to tweet about or at the show, @beer_sessions. All right, so we've got some special guests today. First, my good buddy, Laura Luciano, known as @OutEastFoodie. You've written for Edible East End, and you've been part of many of the food cook-offs at Jimmy's Number 43 over there, including the Castle Lake cook-off.
That's right.
How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I was really excited about this. You're going to tell us about the project, what you're doing, but you approached me about hosting this weekend at Jimmy's Number 43, an event around this vegetable, the pumpkin.
The pumpkin, yeah.
And we have a panel and amateur cook-off and chef cook-off and a dinner on Monday.
That's right.
All at jimmysnumber43.com. But tell us about the project. Give us an overview. And Cheryl Frey's here, too. You guys are going to tell us a little about the overview of this project, how you guys got involved in it. And then Ken Ettinger's going to tell us about what the hell the Long Island Cheese Pumpkin is, because I don't know anything about it.
Well, all right, so I'll begin. About a year ago, the Long Island Regional Sea Consortium, I partner with the Long Island Regional Sea Consortium with Cheryl Frey and Steph Gaylor, and we said, you know, it would be really cool to start championing regional varieties. And so the cheese pumpkin was a variety that we thought was a tangible, not only conceptually, but also from the palate. It's also a variety that is regional to our area, to Long Island. And so this project stands for many things. It stands for food diversity and talking about regional varieties that need to be championed. Because, you know, I think nowadays there are other varieties that are kind of hijacking, or I should say not kind of are, they are hijacking varieties that should be celebrated. And this pumpkin basically has been relegated to the porch due to the modernization of the canned pumpkin industry. And we're trying to take this pumpkin from the porch to the kitchen to bring it back into the culinary vernacular.
This is kind of what's going on in food, slow food arc, seed savers kind of projects, right?
That's right. So the Long Island Cheese Pumpkin is on the arc of taste. So it is a variety that we are championing. We think that, you know, this is something that should be celebrated, and that's why we're doing it.
And then, Cheryl, just for introductions, tell us your role in all this.
My name is Cheryl Frey, and I am one of the founders of the Long Island Regional Sea Consortium. And we actually started the project sitting in the car on the way to some conference somewhere. I don't know what it was. And Steph Gaylor, one of the other founders, and I were just kind of shooting the breeze back and forth. And we said, hey, we need one variety, something that everyone can say, yes, I can get behind this. Just one to start with. And that's why we chose the cheese pumpkin. One of the reasons, strangely enough, we chose it because it says Long Island Cheese Pumpkin on it. So people would say, oh, hey, I know where that's from right away. And so we brought the idea to a few different people, and we wanted to get farmers, chefs, seed savers, gardeners, schools. We wanted to get everybody involved in this, not just a few people who might say, oh, okay, great, I'll take this and I'll make a pie out of it. We wanted a huge conglomeration of people to work on with this. And so it was just the start. This is the start.
And one reason you're on the show today is you got a brewery involved. And, you know, I'm not really a fan of pumpkin beers in general, but because of the show, I've been learning a lot more about it. So you brought this fellow from Blue Point Brewery. Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, guys. I'm Jim Richards, senior brewer, and I run our cask permit at Blue Point Brewing Company. I've had the honor of serving at Blue Point for 13 years of my life, and I'm pretty damn proud of it. So, yeah, I'm here to talk about Long Island Cheese Pumpkin Beer. What we did to it, how we got it, from grain to glass. So I'm pretty excited about it. So
great. So we're going to cover all that stuff today. First thing I want to jump in is, you know, pumpkin beer, the history of pumpkin beer. You know, why do people make beers from pumpkins? You know, for many years, I really wouldn't drink a pumpkin beer. You know, I feel like people emphasize the spices and the flavors. But it turns out that in the old days, they used pumpkins as, instead of malt, right? That was the fermentable sugar.
Yeah, it was a lot of it. A lot of fruit sugars, like, you know, malt, pumpkins, apples, whatever they could find could derive sugar from. They wanted that alcohol. Obviously, alcohol was the cleanest drink possible. And a fermentation beverage was a clean beverage as opposed to water. They had no water sanitation, no, you know, they might get dysentery everywhere. So, you know, fermented beverage was a thing to drink, a safe thing to drink. So, yeah. Ciders, you know, pumpkin beer, you know, some corn.
They would take pumpkins and some other fruits and ferment from that. They didn't have malts.
Yeah, no malt whatsoever. So no malting process. So it was, yeah.
Yeah, I read today, I was reading about in 1801, there was kind of a list of the more common styles of beer. And it was porter, ale, and then pumpkin beer, which is still amazing to me, but it makes sense if you're saying that that's what they use to ferment.
Yeah, like I said, just look for a sugar source. Look for fermentation, so food for yeast, you know. That's all we need, right, to make that alcohol.
So, why do people start making beer with pumpkins again? I mean, I read that, like, was the 80s or 90s, this guy Buffalo Bill Brewery.
Yeah, Buffalo Bill kind of got it going. He kind of brought the style back, and then from there it just kind of took off. And then you got that Sam Adams effect. So now you got got every beer like hitting that shelf a month and a half before it should be. So it's, especially with the pumpkin beers, it's kind of hard to have that early rush of pumpkin beers, like drinking pumpkin beers in early August, you know, mid-August. So, yeah, I mean, pumpkin beers is a style that's always been around. It's nice to have it back. It's nice to actually make a beer with pumpkin again, as opposed just to it being a pumpkin spice, that pumpkin, you know, pie flavor. I mean, with this beer, it was a really big labor of love for me. I mean, obviously with my close contact to the Long Island Regional Seed Consortium and the farm, I mean, it was amazing, you know, to have the ability to do this project with these guys. So
take us through step by step how you guys decided to make the beer, the process of making the beer. And this gentleman over here, Ken Ettinger, he's like you're in the room and you have to talk to us. So tell us your role. I mean, you're the guy that started saving just this pumpkin, or you started the entire Seed Saver project?
I am a Seed Saver going way back for most of my life, and involved in the seed saving movement, I guess, that was started by the Seed Savers Exchange and others. But what made me get involved with the cheese pumpkin is that my mom would make pumpkin pies for every Thanksgiving, and they were really terrific pumpkin pies. And her favorite pumpkin was the cheese pumpkin. She wouldn't use the traditional orange Halloween pumpkin. That was not the pumpkin that you would make pie from. It had to be the tan cheese box shape, slightly flattened, round moshada squash, which is actually a different species than Halloween pumpkin. And that would be a smoother texture, richer, sweeter, and that's what she would need. So she was getting ready to go up to Dix Hills, which wasn't very far from the house on Long Island, and purchase the cheese pumpkin. But the farmer said, well, there aren't any seeds to be available, so they weren't growing any. So what I did is I searched for the missing cheese pumpkin, because it had essentially disappeared from commerce. Seed catalogs didn't carry the cheese pumpkin anymore. So I went out east, and I did find farmers who are really the heroes of the story, because a few farmers were still saving seed. They had saved seed from year to year, and they had developed their own specialized selection of cheese pumpkin. So I collected the pumpkins I could still find from the various farms, and my mom was delighted, and she saved the seed, and started to pass the seed on through the Seed Savers Exchange to dozens and dozens of other seed savers. So in that way. The cheese pumpkin became much more known than it was, and eventually it ended back in commerce.
And what is your role? Are you a botanist? Are you working with other plants?
I am. I'm a retired botanist. I taught at the local community college for many years.
You know, when I grew up, I always thought that pumpkin came in cans. And I never, and you're right about the ornamental, the Halloween pumpkins. I could never actually imagine when I heard about pumpkin beers, I never imagined that you could actually cook with it like a squash. You know, what are some other uses of pumpkin that you know of and some of the history of this particular pumpkin?
Well, I think all pumpkins come from Central America, South America, and they migrated up with the native tribes like corn and beans. And they were grown when the colonists came. They were growing the three sisters. They grew the corn and the pumpkin and the beans together in the same hill. There's a kind of a synergistic quality between the three vegetables. And they're good for, you know, some good for weed suppression, like the vines of the pumpkin and so forth. So the native tribes had moved the pumpkin to all over North America, pretty much, and had learned the ability to develop the ability to save the seeds from one generation to the next, and develop their own regional varieties. So they were using it in stews and dried and probably to feed livestock. They probably had lots and lots of uses of the pumpkin. But this, the cheese pumpkin, is machada. It's very different. It's more related to the butternut squash. So any way that you would use a butternut squash, you could use the cheese pumpkin. Again, it's a very different type of squash than the bright orange pumpkins that you see kind of decaying on the doorsteps right now.
But so then, in a sense, this Long Island cheese pumpkin is like the original pumpkin pie pumpkin, too.
According to my mom, she said that
I've been trying. Cheryl's going to say something about that because that's what I've been trying to tell you guys this whole week. It's the pumpkin pie pumpkin.
Well, we've been trying to do a little bit of research about that, and we have kind of an article that says where people were storing these pumpkins in their cellar. Specifically for pies, that they would put them in there, and you weren't allowed to touch them, and they were prized, where you would come and ask for one, and no, you can't have that. That's for a pie later on. So yeah, saying that they were the original pie pumpkin, of course, they stored them, and that's what they were used for. You couldn't touch them.
Tell us more about the event this weekend, Laura.
Yeah, so on November, so the event starts on November 12th. We have a really distinguished panel. Panelists that are going to be that are going to be talking about the cheese pumpkin. We have Eat Local New York. We have Derek here, so he's going to be on the panel. We have Ken Ettlinger,
hey,
of course.
Hey, Ken.
We got Steph Gaylor is going to be on the panel. We have Amy Goldman Fowler that's going to be on the panel. Jason Fiscolo is going to be on the panel. And who else am I missing that's going to be on the panel? Johanna Kolodny,
yeah.
Yeah, she's going to be on the panel as well. So. And during that panel, we're going to be doing a Long Island cheese pumpkin beer tasting of this beer that we're tasting right now. And then we're going to have some products that we're going to be tasting from Eat Local New York, from Maya's jams and syrups. And then after that, we have a dessert competition. So we have some, you know, talented amateur cooks that are going to be cooking everything from pie to God only knows what. And we're also looking for more cooks as well for the dessert competition.
And now it's Sunday, you got a cook-off.
So Sunday we have a chef's cook-off.
Of the Long Island cheese pumpkin.
Long Island cheese pumpkin, anything goes.
Sweet or savory.
Sweet or savory, whatever you want. Come on out.
And then Monday night there's a special dinner.
That's right, special dinner. We have five courses, Long Island cheese pumpkin beer, Long Island wine, and we have four restaurants, five chefs. So there's Vic's, there's 100 Acres, there's a cook shop, and then we also have Rosie's.
Rosie's. Great. Yeah. You did a great job putting this together, Laura.
Thanks.
And we're going to have some fun drinking this
beer
for sure.
Yeah, we are. We're going to have a good time.
All right. And Jim, let's make a toast and taste your beer.
Cheers.
And
appreciate us having us.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes and talk more about the Blue Point Long Island Cheese Pumpkin Beer on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Don't go in for understanding when you are away. Can't use my heart to think away.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a beer show, too. We're talking about the Long Island Cheese Pumpkin, the original pumpkin pie pumpkin. But one reason we're on the show is that they made it into a beer with a Blue Point Brewery. So, Jim Richards, tell us about the beer in glass.
Okay, so this is a pumpkin oatmeal stout. Kind of the reason why I chose oatmeal stout as a base beer for this is also kind of like with the crust concept. Kind of make it like that oatmeal as kind of like that bready kind of crust concept with this beer. Plus, it's also one of my favorite style beers to drink. So I'm going to make it, you know, I'm going to make what I want, what I want. So that's kind of where it is.
So you started with what?
Our base recipe, which is our pumpkin oatmeal stout with some little adjustments. I added a little more oats, a little more biscuit malt, just kind of, like I said, target that that crust kind of flavor. So.
And then at what point do you bring in the pumpkins?
Yeah, I actually use pumpkin at three different points. I use it in the mash. I use it actually in the kettle, like towards the end of boil, just kind of get that little sugar content up a little bit higher. Then actually post-fermentation to kind of back-sweeten it. So
on the vegetable side, I know that one reason a lot of these heirloom vegetables kind of went out of favor was more like mass production and whether the pumpkins would roll easily on a conveyor
That's
belt
right.
or things like that. So for you guys making a beer, what did you actually do with the pumpkin to make the beer with it? I mean, did you bring in whole pumpkins? You cut them up?
So with that, we actually went to Invincible Summer Farms, the grower of this pumpkin, and they actually grew out 500 pounds of pumpkin for us. We took that into a processor, made it down to 210 pounds of puree. Then I used that puree in the actual process. So.
Oh, that's great. So yeah. you use it in the mash?
Yeah, I used it in mash. I used it in kettle, and I also used it in the fermenter itself for back sweetening. So, yeah.
And then, if I'm like my nose or the taste, what if the pumpkin comes through? And if you're tasting it, do you notice a pumpkin in the beer? Because it's dark, it looks like a stout. I'm actually really happy it's a stout. I like
is.
That.
There
yeah.
seems to be some added complexity because of the pumpkin.
I definitely taste the sweetness.
Yeah, I get a lot of it in aroma up front,
yeah.
I think aroma is kind of, when I drink beer, I think it's the first thing that hits you. You want that nice, whether a hop aroma, whether a pumpkin, whatever you're drinking, I think aroma is a big part of drinking beer, but the sensory perception of beer. It's a big process. So I get that initial sweetness on the palate. So it's not overpowering, but it's actually very nice. And it adds like a little like smoothness to it, I find. So...
It'd be great on vanilla ice cream.
Yeah. Or make ice cream out of it, so that's good too, right?
Is there any spicing in there?
I add minimal spice. I think I add there's a half pound per 30 barrel, so it was minimal. So I just a little bit, just kind of give that, again, to add it to that kind of like that pie flavor concept. So
this is kind of a larger part of this pumpkin project where you guys work with a brewer and a brewery.
That's
and
right.
So are you selling the beer?
Actually, no. This was a one-off. This is not actually approved for sale yet. This is mostly in our tasting room and at this event. So this is it's a big thing for us to be working with being partnering with these guys because it's amazing because it goes back to what we want to do. I mean, every brewer started home brewing back in the day, just doing 5 gallon, 10 gallons at a time, and it goes back to our roots. Coming from grain to glass. This is great for us. I mean, local project trying to help out and trying to bring something forward. So give back. I mean, that's what being a brewer is about.
So Ken and Jim, let's go back to 1801 when pumpkin beers were listed as the more popular styles of beer in America. What do you think that beer tasted like?
Oh, man, I imagine it was probably really sweet, possibly maybe a little bit acidic just because of, poor sanitation, you know.
Not spicy.
Yeah, probably no spices whatsoever. It would probably just be that that sweet, viscous kind of liquid, you know.
That's kind of
what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that pumpkin beer actually goes all the way back to the days of cider drinking.
I'm really not that surprised. If you think about it, pumpkins, they grew lots and lots of pumpkins. What are you going to do with all those pumpkins? You can only make so many pies. So, hey, let's make some alcohol.
The shakers
did
it.
That would be my first inclination.
Alcohol saved the world, right?
That's right.
I guess it's back to what Jim said, that they had squashes and apples, and they brewed it. They didn't have malt.
Yeah, no malt.
They probably didn't have malt facilities, and they didn't have barley for sure.
Yep.
And even though they're coming from England, they had the English tradition. You know, they got off on Plymouth Rock because they needed beer, but they weren't able to. They didn't have a malt facility, and they didn't have barley. So they probably did. The first beer was probably whatever the Indians had growing.
Yeah.
It might have been pumpkin and corn beer. Who knows?
Yeah, probably corn, exactly.
I wonder if the natives were actually, brewing their alcohol from the pumpkin.
You know, the myth is always the origin story. You know, Ken and Jim, how do you think that persons, people, I can't say man anymore, I have to say people. we have equality, but how do you think people first, fermented? What was the origin story for you? I mean, mine, I'll tell you the story. It's the bear coming along, and there's there's a honey hive, and water got in it, and there's some kind of natural fermentation, and the bear eats and drinks and stumbles, or it's the deer in the field, chewing on ripened, overripe, fermented apples. I mean, what do you guys have an idea of a ferment or origin story for fermenting?
It sounds like a good story.
Yeah, that sounds like a great story. That sounds much better than mine, so.
What would yours have been before
I really think it was a bag of grain that sat there, got wet. It, spontaneous fermentation from wild bacteria, wild yeast in the air. People didn't have any food. I have to eat this. They started eating it, wow, wait. That's sweet. That tastes different. Oh, God, I feel euphoric. Oh, this is nice. What the hell has happened? Yeah. So I think that's kind of where it started. I mean, based on, people had food, it lived outside the world. They were nomads. I mean, there was no, settlements yet. No. So I guess where I think it all started. So that's my idea.
People came together to make products like grains that they could ferment.
Yeah, I think it started
otherwise
by accident.
We don't need to be together.
Yeah.
Right?
It all started by accident. We happen to be here, so it's, I think it's pretty cool. So.
Well, I just made my origin story for the pilgrims. They got here. They were out of beer. They found some natives with corn and squash, and they had a kettle, and they cooked it. Does that sound good, Ken?
And then they just left it in the pot to ferment. Sure. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Kind of a big party afterward.
Well, as a botanist, and you know a lot about plants, did you ever play around with home brewing or trying to ferment any of your botanical ingredients?
I did a long, long time ago. And it was just a home brewer kit. And I put bottles filled with Hawaiian punch and yeast and they all exploded that's where I just stopped. I never did anything more. I never looked back on my brewing. Now I'll leave it to other
Jim, when did you start brewing? How'd you get involved in it?
I actually used to work in what I call hell. It's a steel mill. I made a lot of money, but I hated it. I was home brewing at the time. I was dating this lovely lady next to me, and I just kind of chose one day I can either do this, hate my life, and maybe die, or I can go after what I want to do and what I love. And we went to – actually, she got a job in Kentucky at a racehorsing magazine. Went there for a year, which was a horrendous experience. I got a job at Bloomington Brewing Company in southern Indiana. Came back to Indiana, where I'm from. Worked at Bloomington Brewing Company and volunteered at Upland. Kind of learned my way. I was homebrewing still and just kind of, scrubbing floors, cleaning kegs, kind of earning my way, just, earning the right to touch beer. Because I believe it's a right to be a brewer. You got to earn your way. I mean, it's I learned the old way and I got respect for it like that. So, I mean, that's how it is. And from there, I wanted to go bigger. So I got, I applied at Harpoon in Boston. They brought me out. I did about 2 years there. Then from there, our quality control manager, Alan Brady, left there and went to Blue Point. He recruited me to come out there, and the rest is history. 13 years now, and it's an amazing place.
So you guys, you know, years later, you guys have grown, and you have, you know, some new ownership.
Yeah.
But still, you guys are still brewing in Long Island.
Oh, yeah. We're still on the island. I still have, like, my same production staff for the most part. New guys added, the exact same beers, more ingredients, more support. I mean, I'm a kid in a candy store.
Yeah. Did you always make small batch beers for the tasting room?
We always did some small batch beer, but not like this. I mean, the other day, I was in the tasting room after work one day. I think it was a Thursday. Just having a beer. And I looked at our board, and I was like, there are 10 new beers on tap. In my 13 years at Blue Point Brewing, I have never seen 10 new beers on tap. And that's a credit to all my guys, all of our guys, because it's all their recipes. It's all the beers they used to homebrew and ideas they have. And, like, we'll have a lager strain in-house. Let's say, let's brew as many lagers as we can think of. And let's see how it goes, what we like. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. I mean, that's pretty exciting for our guys. I mean, because, I mean, we're all still kids. I mean, we're all still homebrewers at heart. This is where we started. This is where we love. I mean, this is our life. This pays my bills. This is real. This is not like, it's not a game. I mean, it's, people think, you know, okay, you're a brewer. Oh, you're out in the world. You're drunk all the day. You know, no, you can ask her. I come home. I'm tired. I'm wiped out. I smell. You know, it's real. my back hurts. This is real
it's
stuff.
Like from the steel mills to the brew mills.
Yeah, but I'm not getting burnt, so it's cool. Yeah. So I dig that. So right. Yeah.
Well, I like the beer. Do you have a little more to top me up?
I do.
I like it. It's like an oatmeal stout with pumpkin.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. You know, we were thinking before about, you know, a lot of us, the first reaction tonight was like, none of us really like pumpkin beers. And one reason is that it's the spicings. And but a couple of pumpkin beers that I've liked over the years that have sold well at Jimmy's Number 43 include Southern Tier Pumpkin, which many years ago seemed to be the one that stood out. Our good friends Barrier Brewing in Oceanside, Long Island, have made for a few years the Saz Squash, which is Saz hops and squash beer.
Yeah.
I'd like to know how they make it. And out on Long Island, too, Greenport Harbor has the Leaf Pile Ale, which, again, isn't. I don't know how much pumpkin it is. Do you know that beer? It's like a
I know that beer. They're great guys, great brewery. Yeah, Barrier, too. I mean, even, yeah. I'm not sure about what they add to their beers because I'm not there. But, you know, they're all great breweries and great solid beers come out of there, so... Yeah, I mean, I think that was the pumpkin, the Imperial Pumpkin. That was, like, I think, the first real pumpkin beer I actually enjoyed. It was that and Cape May Fisherman's Pumpkin Stout. That was, like, the
Cape
one
May
pumpkin.
Brewing, yeah,
Cape May Brewing. That was, like, the one pumpkin beer I actually dug. Because, I mean, you know, I made this beer, and I'm not a pumpkin guy. So it's like it was crazy for me to make a pumpkin beer when I'm not a pumpkin guy. So like, you know, I'm like, I'm not the guy you want to do this, you know. So. But yeah, I mean, it was, and this was a theory. This was like, you know, I had an idea of what to add. Cause I've never used raw pumpkin in a beer in my life. I have no idea. So
it was raw pumpkin puree.
Well, raw pumpkin puree. Well, processed pumpkin puree. But, you know, I've never used actual pumpkin in a process.
But the pumpkin matters.
That's right.
You start with the ingredients. The reason why a lot of people not like the pumpkin beer is, one, the ingredients that are in it. Two, is there really pumpkin in it?
Yeah.
So that's one reason why I think this turned out to be such a success, is because you started with a really good quality product. You started with a good pumpkin.
With a pumpkin.
Yeah.
For real.
Like a
as
real
opposed
one.
To some beers that don't even have pumpkin.
So you'll be tasting this beer Saturday at your panel and the cook-off and the dinner.
3 days only at Jimmy's Number 43.
All right. And I appreciate you came to me and asked me about it.
Oh, yeah. You're ground zero for everything, Jimmy.
Yeah. And this pumpkin beer. So Ken, you never toyed around with, I'm sure you've cooked pumpkins and pickled it and baked it. When you compare it to a butternut squash, then I get it. Because, you know, when you see that Halloween, the ornamental pumpkin, you could never really, I can never think of eating it. I remember we used to carve them and cook the seeds. I mean, what about this? There's a seed value to these pumpkins, right? Like the seeds have oil. You know, we have different chefs cooking it. From as a botanist perspective, you know, could you give us a sense of the different parts of the pumpkin and what, you know, a chef can do with them?
Well, the Long Island cheese pumpkin can grow really large. I think we had a jumbo pumpkin
31.
That was raised by a school group.
That's right, the Edible School Gardens. They partnered with Slow Food East End, and they grew so 25 schools participated in, they're one of our ambassadors, by the way, to the Cheese Pumpkin Project, and they grew out this pumpkin in the Edible School Garden program. And the largest pumpkin that was at the potluck, the Slow Food East End potluck at Hollackville, was a 31-pound pumpkin that the kids grew. So,
and those were, you know, those were valued in the early days when there weren't any supermarkets and refrigeration, because even more than the butternut, they last a long time. So you can harvest a squash in October, and you can still use it in May or June the next year. So they were really valued, and you store it in your kitchen, anywhere, on the floor, and it just looks beautiful, and it's very useful. A large pumpkin like that's going to have a lot of seeds, and you're absolutely right. The value in oils and vitamins and minerals that the seeds contain, I think pumpkin seeds, I think people are beginning to realize just how nutritious and important they are.
What about pumpkin oil? Pumpkin oil.
There, in Europe, there's a particular pumpkin that's used that doesn't have to be de-hulled. So you can press those seeds and extract this beautiful dark green pumpkin oil. And it's a really, really good.
Yeah, our friends at Rosenthal Wine Imports also have a food division, and they always bring in really expensive pumpkin seed oil. That's like, it's a delicacy. It's like a garnishing oil or a salad oil. Right. You never cook with it. It's so expensive.
Right.
But it wasn't really until today that I thought about all the parts of a pumpkin, a.k.a. squash. I think if you called it a squash, people would get it more. And what do you guys think?
Because
pumpkin has such bad image,
right.
And yet we all love pumpkin pie, but we also only like... I only like my mother's pumpkin pie. So we're going to talk about their recipes. We're going to take a short break. I know that Blue Point brought in some other beers, a rye Weiss, some other historical beers, so they've been playing around with that. We'll taste some of those and be back in a few minutes here on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Let's go. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, we're drinking the Blue Point Special Pumpkin Oat Stout. That's really good. I'm going to try. So at Blue Point Brewery, they've been experimenting with some historical brews. They made a colonial beer for a spring presidential debate on Long Island, right?
Oh, yeah. We actually we found a old George Washington recipe based on, like, I think he was at... He was wintering somewhere at one of the forts, and they found an actual, like, documentation that he actually was making beer at that time. So, and they used that, and they also kind of hybrided that with a colonial recipe they've found. So there's some blackstrap molasses in this. There's some spruce vines. So it's a really kind of creative beer. It's kind of an old world beer that's kind of brought back to life. So I mean, we used to make another. Similar beer to this called Port Richard's Ale. I used to be a brewer at Blue Point working as an outside contractor for Brick House Brewing, and we used to do Port Richard's Ale out of there, which was a Ben Franklin's recipe. So this is like right up our alley, is to bring back the colonial style beer. So it's amazing for us. So
well, that's what I wanted to do. This is Election Day, United States presidential election, senator elections, a lot of, you know, things like judges that you don't even know who's running. But, you know, I wanted to talk about something historical and colonial. That's great. And this guy, Derek, you're part of Eat Local. Tell us what you do, just briefly, because you're part of this whole project, too.
Yeah,
what is
sure.
your Eat Local NY thing?
Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for having me on. And, yeah, I guess it wouldn't be possible without Cheryl and Laura to be part of the Long Island Cheese Pumpkin Project. And I guess our main involvement in it is kind of twofold. Just supporting farmers, people like Steph that are growing the pumpkin. I don't think the beer is possible. Any of the added value products that we're doing to support the project would be possible without the farmers actually growing them and connecting them to to people.
And what's your site? Eat local.
The site's eatlocalny.com.
And you have some products. But before, let's just jump off this. So we're talking about squashes. My issue is that problem with pumpkins is that we think of pumpkins as something you put on a porch. I don't really think that I want to have a beer made with pumpkin or food made with pumpkin, but I like squashes. So let's go to other countries, other languages. So we know in Spanish there's calabaza. Calabaza sounds cool and different. And in Italian there's zucca. Ravioli di zucca is one of my favorite things. Are there any other languages or terms you might use or products that you have that use a pumpkin? But that might, because when I think squash, I think food. When I think pumpkin, I think Halloween.
Yeah, we're playing around with a cool variety of squash called Lunga di Napoli, which is another variety, which is from the Naples region of Italy, which is a huge, huge squash that is a soup squash and feeds communities in Italy. We've also played around with a couple other producers, added value producers, that are doing syrups and jam and really trying to add some power into purchasing and bringing back this variety.
Yeah, so for Ken, for you, as a botanist, I mean, if you give him the mic, the squash family is probably amazing for what? It's easy to grow. It's got a lot of nutrition. I mean,
it is. You know, you asked about different kinds of uses of the pumpkin. Steph Geller was producing a huge amount of blossoms for New York City restaurants. Do you want to say anything about that, Steph?
Steph's here. There's a lot of people in the studio.
We were basically using a lot of Ken's germplasm of his novel varieties that were crossed that would make these really interesting blossoms and small, tiny summer squash. So, yeah, I mean,
they became
popular. Squash blossoms sound good.
And you can use pumpkin blossoms. You can use the cheese pumpkin blossoms, the male ones that don't produce the fruit.
But definitely, you know, I like this. So for me, like in Italian cuisine, I really think that squash is appreciated, whether from the blossoms to soups to ravioli filling. And maybe that's where you guys have to go, is really put this Long Island cheese pumpkin in the context of being one of the greatest culinary squashes in America.
Well,
you know, is that what you guys talk about?
Yeah, we do.
I mean,
we talk about things like, you know, chefs swapping out butternut squash for pumpkin. You know, like when we think about the butternut squash, it does have a similar flavor to the Long Island cheese pumpkin, but wouldn't it be great if we bumped these varieties that are hijacking varieties that should be celebrated, historical varieties?
I'm going to change the name to Long Island Zucca di Zucca. Then people will go crazy, and they have Zucca di Zucca blossoms right now in the Union Square Green Market.
That's pretty sexy, I must say.
That could be your name.
That is sexy.
Here's a challenge. The next beer you make called Zucca di Zucca, don't put any malt in it, and just start with like cut up Zucca di Zucca.
An entire squash beer, huh? Wow, that would be challenging. A lot of fruit pecked in there, huh?
So what's the next beer we have? This is interesting, like a rye
beer.
This
is my rye wife. So this is another one of my babies. I actually used to homebrew this like 20-some years ago. I probably went through 300 different versions of this beer in my head. So we did this a couple years back, let's say like 2009, under Blue Point, and we made this beer, and we just finally kind of brought it back. So it was a brewer's stash. It's number 5 in our brewer's stash. Went out to keg, went out to bottles, and served in our taste room. It's basically a campfire Hefeweizen. I'm a big camper. I like being out on the outside. Fond memories of drinking Weiss beers, heavy Hefeweizens, wheat beers in my early days. Still to this day, actually. I'll be a man. I'll admit to it. I like Hefeweizen. I'm okay with
why
that.
Why campfire?
Brewer, so.
You drink it in the campfire?
Yeah. No, I just I
or
find
you roast the rye on the campfire.
I get that heavy kind of sweetness and that rye, that peppery notes off that rye. I just find it to be more of a heartier beer. And that as it gets cooler out, you want those hearty beers. You know, those warming beers. Plus, it comes in 7% alcohol, so it's not a beer. It's not a weak Weiss beer. It's not one that you can't respect. You got to respect beer. It hurts you sometimes.
So Cheryl, what do you think? That you guys started with a seed saver project, and now you've got a brewery involved. Now, where is this going to go?
From the brewery? Well, to start, I mean, we just, as seed savers and farming groups and all this kind of thing, we just honestly all loved beer. So it was actually our very first idea to get a brewer involved. From there, we're not really sure. We want to celebrate other varieties, too. The cheese pumpkin is kind of the first one that we're doing. Who knows? We might do other beers maybe we'll move on to some liquors. Who knows? But this
maybe
is
a
like,
pumpkin seed. You know, talk about Derek. Are you working with any distilled products or anything for cocktails or?
No distills. But we are making a syrup that you can make cocktails with, which is kind of fun. A lot of people have been playing around with it. Bartenders.
It's a
Long Island cheese pumpkin syrup. Yes, it's really versatile. Just really trying to highlight the versatility of the pumpkin, whether it's on dessert or in cocktails.
Ken, do you think that a pumpkin seed would be a good ingredient for like a spirit or distilled product? Is that something that anyone's done yet? What do you think, Jim? Do you know about distilling?
Not really that familiar with distillation, but I mean, I know it's dangerous, which makes it even cooler. But I think anything that's fermentable that you can create alcohol out of can be distilled. I mean, we've done some in the past. We did some no hop OHB, our barley wine, and we distilled that. So I mean, I really think, I mean, if you have the right base with the right alcohol and the right distiller, I mean, I think, you know, you can do anything if you want. You know, it's all about ideas. And if you have that one crazy idea, is the next groundbreaking, mind-changing new thing out there. And, you know, you can't be afraid to try it, you know.
And, Charlie, where do you think this Long Island Cheese Pumpkin project is going to go? Because you obviously need farmers to grow up. They need projects. They need to be able to make sell it to breweries. They need to make, you know,
well,
other projects.
That's the idea. We want to take this pumpkin and we want to... So, well, one point we saw is maybe seeing it in a can, which we know we're trying to say, oh, you know, get rid of the canned pumpkin. But there's something very specific about the Long Island Cheese Pumpkin. We want it to be versatile for people. We want people to be able to get their hands on easily. We've had a lot of people emailing and calling us up saying, I have no idea where to even find this.
Right.
So step one is actually letting people know where it is. And that starts with farmers growing it. And then being able to sell it, people seeing it in restaurants saying, oh, that's what I want. I want this because I had it at such and such a restaurant. That's really the next step. Right now, we just need to open up people's eyes saying, I want this in my kitchen to make it grocery stores would be another great step.
So, Laura, if I'm telling my listeners this weekend, you can come as an amateur and cook the pumpkin into a pie, and Sunday there's chefs and whatever you want. But where can I get the pumpkin in New York City?
Union Square. Go to Union Square. They have an app. It's a really great app from Grow New York City. You go on there and the app basically, and we have it on our website. We post it under Love to Cook. If they go to that link, basically we have a link to that app, and that app basically tells you what farmers are actually carrying the Long Island cheese pumpkin.
So there'll be some in Union Square, like on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, I think Phillips Farm is one of them. Phillips, I think, is the name of the farm stand that has the cheese pumpkin. They should go there, definitely.
Why was it called the cheese pumpkin? Because that kind of throws a lot of people off. But it doesn't look that weird. It looks like a nice big kind of squash.
Well, if you think about way back when, what cheese rinds looked like, looks like an old wheel of cheese, basically.
That's right.
That's where it comes from. And a lot of people are afraid of that name. You're right. It's a terrible name. I agree with you. It should be changed. But we're not going to change it. People know it by cheese pumpkin is kind
raviolis.
Of...
raviolis.
There's nothing cheesy about it. There's nothing cheesy about it, Jimmy, at all.
And if you know a place, if you found a place, give us a shout out. We'll add it to our website.
Oh,
which,
absolutely.
By the way, our website is lirsc.org. So, you know, shoot us an email. We'll add it if you found one, and we can, you know.
Yeah, so all the fans, including myself, that never liked pumpkin beer, you know, you can like it. And know that in 1801, the popular types of beer were porter, ale, and pumpkin beer in America. And a lot of colonials brewed it out of necessity because they didn't have malt. And they definitely didn't have barley. That was the big thing, right, Jim?
Yeah, exactly. They had really no other useful, viable crops to make alcohol from. And again, alcohol was the safest beverage possible. I mean, again, fermentation kills bacteria, kills off, you know, dysentery, things like that. And you don't want to drink the water and get sick, you know. It's a whole, you know, going to Tijuana thing. You don't drink the water in Tijuana, you know. It's not how it is. So think about a concept.
And then, Ken, for you, you must have, do you have a recipe from your mother or grandmother that uses the Long Island cheese pumpkin?
Yes. Yeah. Basically, she made a something like an egg custard, like you'd make a custard pie with eggs and milk, and then adding the pumpkin puree that she would mash up.
Would you start by cutting the pumpkins and cooking them?
Yes,
she would actually into a puree.
Yeah, today it's easy enough to section the pumpkin into small pieces and microwave it. You know, 10 minutes later you can just strip the rind off and mash it right up. But she would boil it in a big pot. And then she would mash it like potatoes.
So what I get in a can is that's already kind of like a cooked pureed pumpkin.
That is.
So there's a couple steps.
And then she would be pretty heavy on the spices. She would make a very spicy pie. So she would have a lot of cinnamon and a lot of the ginger and some cloves. And then she had a pie crust that she would make, which was very nice. She would add maybe two or three eggs to your standard flour and shortening and water combination. So I think there are places where you can actually find her recipe.
Yes,
I know. I saw a card out from
Slow Food East End. Yeah,
Slow Food East End.
We do, and also Edible East End also published it in their magazine, as well as you could find it online at Edible
Laura,
East End.
So this is like, I've known you a long time, but you're Out East Foodie. That's your handle.
Yep,
you're involved with Slow Food East End,
yes.
Edible East End. So out there, it sounds like you guys have a really cool like kind of agriculture food community.
We do. I mean, everything is related. You know, I mean, it's funny how all these things have fallen into place. I gravitated towards the Long Island Regional Seed Consortium because I have a passion for food diversity, and I have Cheryl to thank and Stephanie to thank. Through them, I was educated about, you know, pretty much our food system and some of the issues that are happening within the food system, and also some of the things that we need to be celebrating in the food system. And so I feel, you know, that this is... being involved in Slow Food, what they stand for is good, clean, and fair food. And I believe that what Stephanie and Cheryl are doing at the Long Island Regional Seed Consortium is really important stuff. Seed sovereignty, you know, really championing these varieties that need to be out in the public. People need to hear about, you know, these types of varieties, like the Long Island Cheese Pumpkin, for example.
Great. So we're going to wrap it up. I'm going to go around the room. I'm going to say, start off, one of my favorite things made with the Zucca, or the Long Island Cheese Pumpkin, I would say for me, it is definitely ravioli di Zucca. And everybody just say what, or it can be a drink or food that you like from this special pumpkin.
Beer.
You like pumpkin beer.
I had a pretty amazing Long Island Cheese Pumpkin lasagna this last weekend. It was absolutely pretty amazing. So I think that lady, she made
that
it right
was
there.
Me.
So yeah, I really dug that. So I'm gonna go with that. So
oh, thanks,
Ken.
No, I think it has to be pumpkin pie. You know, it still is an indelible part of my memories of childhood. So I'm very partial to that.
And Derek?
Yeah, I mean, other than my mother's pumpkin pie, we've been playing around with some cool recipes, and a hot toddy made with the pumpkin Ooh. Syrup is on Ooh. Top of the list.
That sounds good.
And I then haven't
Steph.
Had
it
yet.
Wow.
Steph?
I would have to say the Long Island cheese pumpkin pizza, actually, that Laura made too.
Oh, jeez.
what about wow. the squash blossoms?
That's we have a star.
That was for something totally different.
You guys have to make this sound better. Come on. The squash blossoms in a nice Italian restaurant. What else?
Mine is gnocchi. That's it. Mine's pumpkin gnocchi.
Or squash.
With ricotta.
Gnocchi.
Yeah.
Gnocchi di zucca.
All right. Si.
Well, this is a fun show. We try to cover some things. You know, we had some shows recently about... you know, food waste and making beer out of, you know, leftover bread. And this is another one we're trying to tie in food and beer this time of year. Well, it's election day, so a little bit of American. Let's pop your colonial beer on the way out.
So,
you know, American history includes making beer out of pumpkins. And I learn something new each and every week on Beer Sessions Radio. A couple of shout-outs locally, November 30th coming up. Our good buddies Big Alice Brewing in Long Island City, they're part of the Beard Mustache Contest. There's a lot of that, the Movember month and all that stuff. But check out Big Alice Brewing. They're doing a lot of new things. They're in Long Island City if you haven't been over there. And also our special event, Battle of the Belgians, is coming up December 3rd. Over 30 Belgian and American-style Belgian beers at Jimmy's Number 43. Always worthwhile. So thanks, everybody, for coming out. And what's the last beer before we close out, Jim?
Excuse me. This is our colonial beer. So this is I brought this out in honor of our election day. So
this is the one that was a presidential debate with Hillary Clinton and or Bernie Sanders or Trump.
I think this was actually Trump and Clinton. Yes, yeah. So this is our version of a kind of a colonial ale. So it's interesting if you look back at colonial beer recipes. Some of their terminology is very strange. So you're trying to decipher a lot of these things. It's like how because they don't really know what they're using. They know what they're using, but they don't have the modern names. So it's like you're looking back and saying what they're calling brown malt. Okay, we have a brown malt now, but is that malted barley? Is that kiln barley, or is that just fire roasted barley? What is it? Is it germinated barley? So that's what I found to be the most interesting part of this is like trying to decipher old recipes and trying to make that beer.
It's kind of like the Constitution. What's the Second Amendment?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a militia, right to bear arms, and
exactly. But exactly.
This is a great show, and just thank you, America. All right.
Yeah.
And guess what?
Cheers.
Right now, across the country, brewers are toasting to you and me.
Yes.
For this great American tradition of
Cheers.
Beer. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Ryan. I'd like to applause one more time, David. It's awesome. Thank you. Someone's voting out there today, and it was nice to see the lines at the voting polls. But I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Laura, Cheryl, Jim, Ken, Derek, and Steph for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, and our engineer, David Tatasciore. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Cheers.
Cheers.
For listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.